ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
We'll look at a verse tonight, to begin with, from the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 23rd verse. And the first word in this verse is shaknoti. So everyone please say shaknoti.
Shaknoti.
So this word means is able. The ability to do something. And the verse talks about an ability to do something that is more like the ability to not do something. And that is to not give in to urges. So we'll go through one word at a time, and the word for word, which is displayed below what's on the screen. And the next two words are iha eva, please say. In the present body. So consider that for a moment, that we each have a present body that we're in. And when we say present body, what does that indicate to you when we use that terminology? That this is the present body. What more can you infer from that? Don't be afraid to use the grab for the microphones. Whoever rules the airways wins. I heard that during a political campaign about 10 years ago. Go ahead. Still true today as it was 10 years ago.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So looks like it indicates that, you know, the this current body, we get many bodies, and it seems
right, because if it's saying there's a present body, that means there was a past body, and there will be a future body. So in this present body, and there's something very special about the body that we have now. This verse is speaking to us, and we are human beings. So human beings, manusha, are known to be extremely valuable, the human form. It is an opportunity, yam labva chaparam lab, labvam sudurlabam idam bahusambhavanti manushyam artadam anityam apihadira. The Srimad Bhagavatam says that it's extremely rare to get a human body. And when one gets one, it's a gift from nature. As we're passing through many kinds of bodies, and you can't put in a request and get what you want. You get what you deserve by the course of material nature. So labvam sudurlabam, it's very difficult to get. Sudurlabam. Idam bahusam bhavante. You get it after many, many different other kinds of bodies that aren't equipped for spiritual realization. And it's also anityam, it's very temporary. But artanam, it means it has, you can realize the full spiritual value that you're intended to realize from the human form of body. So iha eva in the present body is significant. And this verse is saying that we should develop an ability within this present body. And we're going to find out what that ability is that's so valuable. Yaha. One who. So again, part of this same sentence here, one who is able in this present body, so dhum, to tolerate. So toleration may sound like a passive ability, and it is. But it's an ability nonetheless, just as in the Srimad Bhagavatam, forgiveness is described as an empowerment. It is the empowerment of brahmanas, the ability to forgive, actually. And the ability to tolerate is extremely valuable because the material world is always changing. And we're living within a changing environment, although we are not changing. And the ability to not react to that, to overreact to the changing environment, is one of the most valuable of abilities to acquire while one is in this present body, iha eva. Prak, Everyone say prak. Before. Sharira. The body. Vimokshanat. So this phrase means before you give up the body, while you're in this body and before you're forced to give it up, there's an ability that you should develop that is highly valuable. Next is kama, desire, krodha, and anger, udbhavam, generated from vegam, urges. So, what is it? The ability to tolerate kama, krodha. That is desire. And what this means very specifically is unnecessary desires, desires that are meant to satisfy or gratify the senses of the present material body. And krodha, anger, is described as an emotion that arises when one isn't able to fulfill those desires, as in the verse, Dayato vishayan pum sam sangas teshu bhajayate, sangat sanjayate kama, 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 krodha bhajayate. When one develops attachment for material things and wants to enjoy them, and then becomes frustrated in not being able to enjoy them, because inevitably either we get full contact with them and then we lose that, or we're not fully satisfied and we can become angry. Anger arises, and from anger we become bewildered, we lose our memory, and then we fall back down again into the entanglement of the material world. So spiritual life means to stay above the fray, be above the entanglement of the material nature. The soul can be dragged and thrown. Actually, there are two potencies that are mentioned in the Shastra. One is we can be thrown from our spiritual position and then covered over. And once that covering takes place, it requires great diligence in order to come to the point of recovering one's spiritual health again. So it's recommended that one keep oneself spiritually awake throughout this lifetime and not succumb to the lower modes of material nature. In the Gita, Krishna describes urdvam gacchati sattvasta madhyam tishtanti madhava jaganya guna vrittista adoga chanti tamasaha. So this verse describes what are the effects of the three modalities of nature. And those three are sattvagun, which is the a force of nature that's all-pervading, which instills in one virtue, the ability to see the difference between the body and the self. And then there's passion, or rajas, which is the middle mode. Sattva is the higher mode. And rajas is characterized by unlimited longings and desires. And the need to fulfill unnecessary necessities. And then tamas, or ignorance, is called jaganya guna vrittista, abominable. This is in this verse Krishna speaking. He says the mode of ignorance is terrible. It takes you down into a place that you shouldn't go or look at, but you're dragged there, and it's very difficult to come out of. Jaganya guna vrittista adoga chanti tamasaha. So these three modalities, when we come in contact with them, Krishna says, determine our fate. How we associate with those modes, how we make a connection with them, will determine the direction that we go in our life, up, down, or stay in the middle. He says later in the 13th chapter, Purusha prakriti stohi punkte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya sarasad yoni janmasu. He says that the cause of any good or bad that we get anywhere within the universe is a result of our association with these three gunas: goodness, passion, and ignorance. So to practice during this lifetime, to cultivate the higher modes of material nature, especially sattva gun, goodness, and then to rise above it, through the practice of devotional service, rising above even sattva-gun means to come to a position which is called Vasudev, or Shuddha-sattva. Because even goodness, and I'm becoming a little technical now, but the Bhagavad Gita is very detailed in the way, Krishna is very detailed in the way he explains the three modes of material nature in the Gita. And there's a way in which one can go beyond even these three modalities. Even though the mode of goodness is ideal, especially for spiritual advancement, it always becomes mixed with lower modes. Because, as Krishna describes in the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the modes are always mixing, and they're fighting for supremacy. So even someone in the mode of goodness may at some point become affected by the mode of ignorance. There may be a tinge of that or passion. And somebody in the mode of passion may be tinged with goodness or with ignorance. Somebody in the mode of ignorance, you might find, has a little tinge of goodness as well. And there's a mixture. But above the mixtures, and above mixed goodness, or goodness tinged with any of these lower modes, is called Shuddha-sattva. And this is attained through the practice of bhakti, bhakti-yoga. And Krishna describes this in the Bhagavad Gita in the following words. Mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti-yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahmabhuya yakalpate. This verse says that as you become steady in the practice of bhakti yoga, you will gradually rise above all the three modes of material nature and come to the spiritual platform. This is ideal. And this is what is being advocated in this verse, that before you leave the body, you should feel the sense of forced efficiency. Do you know what that is? Well, I'll give you a practical example. I live near the airport and I travel a lot. And there's different ways I can travel. One is by car. Let's say I'm going somewhere by car, and maybe if it's open-ended, I don't have to be there at a certain time exactly. I can keep extending it and say, well, I'll leave a little later, I'll leave a little later, and I can go when I want. And there's another kind of travel where I have a plane to catch, and then a taxi cab comes, picks me up. And if I don't get in the taxi cab, I'll miss the plane, and there'll be a lot of repercussions by missing the plane. You don't want to do that. And so I know that I have to be there at a certain time, therefore I get a lot done in the last hour. That's forced efficiency. When you know you have to do something at a certain time, you tend to rise to the occasion. In fact, I saw a bumper sticker once that said, if it wasn't for the last minute, I wouldn't get anything done. However, those who are spiritually aware understand from this verse, praksharira, before you leave this body, that we have a finite number of breaths and days and so forth in this lifetime, and therefore it behooves us to be aware, we should not become psychotic, but we should become aware of the fact that there's a finite number of days left. And if I am aware of that there's a way in which there's an end of this body and there's a taxi that's going to come pick me up once I leave. Now, depending on how we conduct ourselves during this life, that will determine the kind of taxi that picks us up when we leave, what kind of taxi you want. You don't want Yamaraj's people to come pick you up. In any case, being aware of this, that before you leave the present body, there's a duty to do. And what is that? There, I may concoct various duties. In fact, this is the subject of the Srimad Bhagavatam. What is the duty of one who's about to die? And of course, in a conversation Prabhupada had once with a professor who said, Swamiji, you're giving a sannyas to young people, but as far as my studies show me, sannyas is meant to be given to old people. And Prabhupada said, what is your definition of old? And the professor didn't have an answer or a definition of old. And so Prabhupada said, old means about to die. Can you say that you're any older or younger than I am? So there's this sense that at any time I may leave, and therefore before I leave this present body, I should be able to tolerate kama and krodha, lust and desire and anger, excuse me, that are generated from the urges. And if I do that, then I become a sukinara. Everyone say.
Sukinara.
Yes. I just came from Japan, actually. And that sounds Japanese. Sukinara. So now let's look at the translation and purport. The translation says, before giving up this present body, if one is able to tolerate the urges of the material senses and check the force of desire and anger, he is well situated and is happy in this world. Very interesting, because there may be a subtle, there may be subtle propaganda in the world, especially in the Western world, that there's a way in which by becoming more materially situated or better situated materially, one may become happy. But here Krishna is saying the way to actually become a happy human is an internal process through which one develops a discipline of mind and body and is able to tolerate various urges that visit us from time to time. And by doing that, one will actually feel happy even in this lifetime. So this is something that one could try for and make as a goal in one's life. And as Srimad Bhagavatam brings up, there are many duties to do and there are many things to hear about in life. Shotra Yadini Rajendra Nrinam Santir Sahasrasha. Shukadeva Goswami told, or Parikshit Maharaj speaks about how there are many topics to hear in this world, but specifically one should concentrate on those that are meant for the human beings to prepare themselves to leave this world properly. So now the purport. If one wants to make steady progress on the path of self-realization, you must try to control the forces of the material senses. They are the forces of talk, forces of anger, forces of mind, forces of the stomach, forces of the genitals, and forces of the tongue. One who is able to control the forces of all these different senses and the mind is called Goswami or Swami. Such Goswamis live strictly controlled lives and forego altogether the forces of the senses. Material desires, when unsatiated, generate anger. And thus the mind, eyes, and chest become agitated. Therefore, one must practice to control them before one gives up this material body. One who can do this is understood to be self-realized and is thus happy in this state of self-realization. It is the duty of the transcendentalist to try strenuously to control desire and anger. So, there are enticements in this world, and there is a misconception also that's propagated quite widely about how one can become happy. This statement by Krishna, however, is the authoritative statement about how one becomes a happy human, and it seems rather simple, doesn't it? I'm not saying easy, I'm saying simple. It's a simple principle that if you can learn to tolerate urges, especially of desire and anger, then in this lifetime, you'll become happy. Now, as a contrast, when I was walking through the San Francisco airport, I took a picture of the Ghirardelli chocolate sign. And it says, Ghirardelli chocolate. Moments of timeless pleasure. There's a picture right here. Moments of timeless pleasure. And, I mean, that's a lofty offer for a chocolate bar. What is timeless pleasure anyway? It sounds very esoteric. And oftentimes we'll find this kind of propaganda wherever we go. People will advertise the kinds of the ways in which one might get some material thing or some situation as being the solution to one's problem, which is that I'm suffering and I want to be happy. And timeless pleasure seems just within reach when you look at this sign. If I get a chocolate bar, I'll be okay. And another sign I copied here, it was from Coca-Cola, and it says, open happiness. And happiness is actually coming out of the bottle. That's really what they say, open happiness. And, of course, that seems ludicrous as well, if you really think about it. But who thinks about it? Oftentimes, I simply take in the environment, and I see various ways in which happiness is offered through this and that medium. There are various scripts that are written by people who write movies. And in those scripts that are coming from the minds of people who are untrained in the science of Bhagavad Gita, they may present a scenario where boy meets girl, girl meets boy. I mean, this is the common theme. They're suffering, then they get together, and then heroically they conquer the world and they live happily ever after. I mean, there are various combinations and permutations. When I studied Shakespeare and other plays, you know, my professor always pointed out it's always the same thing recycled in different ways. So this same theme that pervades the material world, this idea of a combination of various elements that will make me happy. But Prahlad Maharaj asked the question in one of his prayers to Lord Nrsingadev, Kutrashisha Shuti Sukham Rigatrishni Rupa. And this is a question, where is it? Where is this happiness that's being advertised all over the world? He says, Shruti Sukham, you hear about it, but you never actually get it. Now, if somebody invites you to their home for dinner, and you go there and they sit you down in the living room, the kitchen is nearby, and you hear somebody in there moving pots and the stove is coming on and off, but then they never actually invite you into the dining room, and they never bring anything out. Maybe a drink of water or something like that on a little tray, but it never comes. You hear the sounds, and maybe the smells are even there, but it gets later and later, and it's like, I think I got to go now. Okay, bye. This is synonymous to the experience that Prahlad Maharaj is asking about, that is promised in the material world, that one never quite gets that meal that one's looking for. It's promised. You hear the sounds of it. Therefore, he says, Shruti Sukham. The happiness we attain in the world is happiness that you just hear about, but you never actually experience it. It's not sustained. There are poems, one of them written by Jayadeva Goswami, in which he talks about the happiness in the material world as being too minuscule to actually satisfy us. He said, if you're a person who's wandering in the desert and thirsty, if someone brings you one drop of water and says, here's your water, you can't deny that it's water, but you also won't be satisfied. You actually need to have gallons of water. You need a river to guzzle water to overcome your dehydration and to feel satisfied again. One drop from an eyedropper will not do it. So the happiness that's promised in the material world, the happiness that I hear about, it never actually comes. And when it does come, it's so tiny that it agitates the senses for more, and I never actually come to a place where I feel satisfied. So this emphasis on finding happiness through eating and through collecting many material things we'll find in both the Yoga Sutras and also in Srila Rupa Goswami's book called The Nectar of Instruction. The Upadeshamrita mentions a principle called Atyahara. And if you break it down into two words, it's Atihara. So Ati means extreme, and Ahara means eating. So Atyahara means extreme eating. This could be a new television show. In fact, I know that there are Olympics of eating hot dogs on Coney Island there's a champion from Japan who's undefeated for many years, eating more hot dogs than anybody else, faster than anybody else, extreme eating. To one degree or another, there's ways in which this represents our endeavor to try to find ways to embellish the basic instincts of life in order for us to become happy. For instance, eating. Hare Krishna. For instance, eating. One may think that by eating more, or becoming more elaborate in the way that one arranges the food and so forth, that I'll become happy. And it's atihara also means extreme collecting. It means collecting more than you need. So there's a counter principle to this, which is mentioned in the process of yoga. In the Yoga Sutra, there's various stages of advancement in yoga, and one of them is called pratyahara. So you hear the word ahara there also, right? So that is two words put together by Sandhi rules, pratyahara, which means anti-eating and anti-collecting. So there's atyahara, extreme eating, and pratyahara, anti-eating, which means not placing one's primary faith in the happiness in life in just eating. In other words, you don't live to eat. You eat to live. And this is the principle given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that you should take what you need to satisfy the senses just enough so that you can be very healthy and your mind can be very bright all the time, so that you can contemplate higher subjects and not be disturbed by the constant barrage of unnecessary desires that come into the mental system. The verse is kamasya nendriya pritir labo jivete yavata jivasya tatva jignasya narto yascheha karmabi, which says that kamasya nendriya pritir, one should never organize one's life around the principle of being happy through just gratifying the senses, because you won't get it. You won't become happy by that. Kamasya nendriya pritir labo jivete yavata, whatever gain you get in the material world, it shouldn't be used for sense gratification. Jivasya tattva jignasa means that you should stay very healthy. Don't eat too much, don't eat too little. Don't recreate too little and don't recreate too much. Don't sleep too much, don't sleep too little. Stay very healthy in body and mind. But why? So that you can use your human intellect to inquire about God. Because it requires full concentration. That's one of the reasons that yogis don't intoxicate themselves. Because when you're intoxicated, then it impedes your ability to think very subtly about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and self-realization, and about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even if you're an accountant, it blurs your ability to add up numbers properly if you're intoxicated. That's why you should never hire an accountant who's addicted to drugs. And if you find out that your accountant is an alcoholic or is taking all kinds of drugs, then get a new one. People who intoxicate become bewildered and cannot think critically. So jivasya tattva jignasya, you should be a very critical thinker and use your fine human intellect to try to understand very subtle principles that deal with the absolute truth. So this is the principle of pratyahara. Don't over-collect also. Don't take more than you need, because it just becomes a burden. And actually, when you keep just what you need and you winnow out the things that you don't, then you develop a great deal of focus in your life. And this is shown also in very practical ways, that if you're working on a project, you put away everything else. And just keep that one project on your desk or in your view, so that you can think about it. It also helps, because we have so many other things to do, to concentrate on one thing at a time. Multitasking is not efficient. If you think about the thing that you're doing right now and put your best into it, then move on to the next thing. And don't try to collect too many things and do them at once. In fact, even collecting too much information, even spiritual information, is illegal. Because sometimes people study all kinds of scriptures, but their motivation is to have more information than everybody else, so that they can either impress or defeat other people, and thus, again, become number one. This is called becoming a bookworm, and one becomes bewildered by this. This is over-collecting. So one should keep what one needs in order to keep oneself focused on the goal of life, which is to inquire with precision about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, our relationship with Him, and how to make advancement. So these principles are very helpful in following the instruction that Krishna has given in the verse that we're concentrating on today that starts with Shaknoti Haivayashodhum. So before I move on to the next several points, I will take a few reflections. And how's the temperature in here? Yeah? I noticed you're all bundled up. Is it cold? It's a little cold. I mean, look at Molly, she's freezing. I mean, you don't have to make it hot, but just by increments move up. This is another aspect of the material world. You can never quite get comfortable because I notice this. If I go to somebody's house and I sit down, I have my sweatshirt on, and I start to feel a little warm, I take my sweatshirt off, and immediately the host will run over and turn the heat down. And then I'll get cold, and I'll put it back on, and they'll run over and turn it on again. It happens in cars, it happens in apartments, everywhere you go. You can't quite get comfortable. It's very difficult. We're not meant to be fully comfortable here. But let's take a few reflections. A reflection really is anything that you heard that, especially if it's useful to you. Because really what we're trying to take out of the Bhagavad Gita is practical information that we can apply. Because there's lots of theoretical information that one might collect or hear about, but unless one actually takes something and applies it now and says, today, right now, I can apply this, then one may feel a lack of traction in spiritual life. It may become more theoretical. But Shyamalangi's got something here, and she's right in the front row, so let's hear what she's got.
In the purport, I just noticed that force of talk, it says force of anger and force of desire, but force of talk, that's also very important to control it, because sometimes if we don't think and talk, we can't take it back if we talk something wrong. And I remember you always say that even while sending an email, don't press the hit, like send button, till you're very sure of it, wait for some time. So that urge also we need to control.
Very much so. It's one of the main items that determines how our consciousness develops, and that is how we control our speech. And Krishna even mentions it as a whole category of discipline in the Bhagavad Gita, and that is the austerities of speech. And that is, you must speak truthfully, he says. This requires some practice, because there is a tendency to want to embellish the truth. How many units did you sell today? Well, actually I sold 7, but I'll say 9. And then you might ask yourself, why did you say 9? What's wrong with 7? Could have just said 7, but the tongue says 9. And then you're stuck with this, like, 9. The record says 7. It's like, oh yeah, the other 2 dropped out of the car. I don't know. It makes a complicated life when you don't tell the truth. And when you're able to turn the wheel back towards the truth and actually, you know, pull it out of yourself and say what really happened and the way it really is, then there's a kind of relief that you don't have to make up for all the things that you told that were untrue, and your mind doesn't become so disturbed. You're just the person who tells the truth. And if you stick to that, then you become qualified for this power that's being mentioned in this verse, this ability to be able to control your senses by practicing telling the truth. Then he says that your speech should be pleasing. It should also be non-agitating. It should be, one should regularly recite the scriptures. There's one other. Beneficial. Yeah, and this principle comes up in the Bhagavatam that you don't necessarily, if just because you heard about some disaster somewhere, doesn't mean you have to bring it up to everybody. There's a tendency one might see in the news or alongside the road or hear something about some disaster. And then you meet somebody. Did you hear about it? And what happened? It was a disaster. Somebody died, somebody wrecked. And there's a tendency to do that. Bhagavatam says you don't have to do that. Just stick to those things that are more beneficial and pleasing, unless it relates to the immediate welfare of the person you're talking. Like there's a flash flood on the way, you can tell them, you know, let's go. But these are urges that come up through the speech that one can very deliberately work on, and it's amazing how much progress one can make spiritually by controlling the speech and following the austerities of speech. One will see immediate results by practicing this. Just as much as when one fasts during the day, you just don't eat. There's a communication that goes on between the body and the mind, especially the stomach, and you know, just communicates up, sends a message up, it's like time for lunch, and then the brain says it's not because we're not eating today, and the stomach says, what? And then there's a metaphysical conversation that takes place. A why? Because it's Ekadashi and because we don't eat on Ekadashi and so forth. And similarly, when one tells the truth, there's a similar internal dialogue that will take place. It's like, why are you telling the truth? Why can't we embellish this? At least a little bit. Make it sound a little better. Then one comes back to understanding that there's an ordered way in which the universe works. That if you just tell the truth and stick to Krishna's plan, that everything comes out fine. And if you veer off that path, then things become complicated. And life is much better when you tell the truth. So these practices are very practical, and you can do them right here in Silicon Valley. You can do them in New Delhi. You could practice it in... where? Come on, give a shout out for your hometown. Where? Mumbai. You could do this in Mumbai. It's doable in Mumbai. A Bollywood movie coming out, Telling the Truth in Mumbai. So what other reflections do you have? Yes.
Smaraj, I like, as you mentioned in the beginning, that the controlling the senses... then one becomes Sukhinara, and this is as per Krishna. We always hear many slogans, dialogues said by this person, A, B, C, D, you know, then we started feeling about for a second. But when it comes from the authority, who is absolute, that it means something. So I think it's very refreshing to think that this is not something ordinary words which is spoken by somebody.
Good point. Yeah, it's very helpful to administer such control over one's senses when it comes from our supreme teacher. And when the teacher is also noticing what we do, he's there within the heart, and he'll notice that you're trying to follow his instructions, although albeit imperfectly, as long as you're trying, then he'll give you strength to continue that trend. And it's a very reciprocal kind of relationship. When you notice what the instruction is, you appreciate that it's coming from the Supreme Being, and then when you try to enact it to the best of your ability, he will, from within the heart, as he says in the Gita, will encourage you and will give you intelligence how to do it more, and he'll even give you facility. And that's where a relationship is actually built between us and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and is trying to carefully follow his instructions. It starts at that level. What else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I really like the point you mentioned that Prahlad Maharaj was saying that, you know, happiness is in the material world is good in hearing, but one never achieves it.
Yeah, let's look at that verse. Kutra shisha shruti sukham, number 7-9 what? Go to 7-9, and Mukharavind will tell us within 3 seconds or less. 7-9-25. Okay, 7-9-25, we're going to get a chance to look at this directly, right from the Srimad Bhagavatam for ourselves. I'll say, please repeat. Kutra shisha shuti sukha mrigatrishni rupa. Kvedam kalevaram ashesha rujam viroha. Nirvidyate na tu jano yadapiti vidvan. Kama nalam madhula vaishama yandurapai. The translation is, in the material world, every living entity desires some future happiness, which is exactly like a mirage in the desert. Where is water in the desert? Or, in other words, where is happiness in this material world? As far as this body, what is its value? It is merely a source of various diseases. The so-called philosophers, scientists, and politicians know this very well, but nonetheless they aspire for temporary happiness. Happiness is very difficult to obtain, but because they are unable to control their senses, they run after the so-called happiness of the material world and never come to the right conclusion. Purport. There is a song in the Bengali language which states, I constructed this home for happiness, but unfortunately there was a fire, and everything has now been burnt to ashes. This illustrates the nature of material happiness. Everyone knows it, but nonetheless, one plans to hear or think something very pleasing. Unfortunately, all of one's plans are annihilated in due course of time. There were many politicians who planned empires, supremacy, and control of the world, but in due time, all their plans and empires, and even the politicians themselves, were vanquished. Everyone should take lessons from Prahlad Maharaj about how we are engaged in so-called temporary happiness through bodily exercises for sense enjoyment. All of us repeatedly make plans, which are all repeatedly frustrated. Therefore, one should stop such plan making. As one cannot stop a blazing fire by constantly pouring ghee upon it, one cannot satisfy oneself by increasing plans for sense enjoyment. The blazing fire is bhava-maha-dava-agni, the forest fire of material existence. This forest fire occurs automatically without endeavor. We want to be happy in the material world, but this will never be possible. We shall simply increase the blazing fire of desires. Our desires cannot be satisfied by illusory thoughts and plans. Rather, we have to follow the instructions of Lord Krishna. Sarvadharman prityaja mamekam sharanam braja. Then we shall be happy. Otherwise, in the name of happiness, we shall continue to suffer miserable conditions. Let's look at the verse again. Kutra. We'll look at the word for word. Kutra means where. Ashishaha means benedictions. Shuti sukhav, simply pleasing to hear of. Mrigatrishni rupa, exactly like Maharaj and Desh. So we hear about all these great benedictions we're going to get, right? But he says it's a mirage. You see the water in the desert? It looks like a lake. It's not there. It represents something. It's a reflection of the real thing, which is somewhere else. So one should not become faked out by the temporary, illusory idea of happiness in the material world. Rather, one should dedicate oneself to higher happiness. Lord Rishabhadev is good medicine for this. If you read the fifth chapter of the... Fifth chapter, Lord Rishabhadeva's instructions to his sons. He had 100 sons, and he instructed them well. They actually knew everything, but he did it for public understanding. But he gave many very powerful instructions, one of which one can take to heart. Nayam deho deha bhajam loke kashtan kama marhate vidbujamye. Tapo divyam putraka yena sadvam should yet yes mad brahma saukyam tonantam. And he advocates that one should use one's human life to perform divine austerity. That is, put oneself out. You should try strenuously to make spiritual advancement. And to that end, there are recommended ways in which you should use your energies in this life by concentrating them on acts of devotional service. And by doing that, this is called tapo divyam. It's austerity that you're performing for the sake of advancing spiritually. And he said, from that, you will get saukyam twanantam, which means unlimited happiness. That means happiness that continues on forever. Otherwise, he said, if you stick to the other kind of status quo happiness from the material world, you get the same level of happiness as the pigs and the dogs. And it can't be that valuable if they get it, because it's just available everywhere. It's very base and common. It's not important, and it's not valuable at all. So don't take that as a consolation. Take the higher road, which can be developed. And one can develop a taste for this tapo divyam, because the reward is so great. What other feedback? Yes. From the internet. Fantastic. Extra points for those who call in from or text in from the internet.
This is Shivas Pandit from Cincinnati.
There's a Shrivas Pandit, a parallel universe, perhaps?
I wanted to share a realization regarding Atyahara, the fact that not only does it refer to food or collecting more material things than necessary, but also complicating one's life by endeavoring to collect more knowledge and more fame than necessary.
Mm. Such a nice point, that one may collect more knowledge than one needs to, because there's only so much knowledge one can digest. It doesn't mean that one should restrict one's hearing. However, to collect knowledge with the impetus, just a verification, R. Srivas Pandit Prabhu just walked in now, so he's not in Cincinnati. Our obeisances to the Srivas Pandit in Cincinnati and our local pundit as well. Yes, collecting more knowledge than necessary. There's a story of Tapana Mishra, who had studied the Shastras thoroughly and in a very wide way. He knew so many Shastras, he became confused about what was the goal of life. And because of that, he was in a confused state. He had a dream about meeting Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the next day he went out and he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and took shelter of him and asked him, what should I do? And Mahaprabhu accepted his surrender and told him he should concentrate on chanting Hare Krishna. And then he also told him he should go to Hardwar. And that was very interesting, because he had just taken shelter and now he sent him to a place where there are many Mayavadis present. Pardon me? Varanasi. He sent him to Varanasi. And later on, he met with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But much is made in that section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita about the confusion of Tapana Mishra. Tapana Mishra, you can think of his initials of his name, Tapana Mishra Brahmana. Too many books, TMB. He read too many books. But there it's mentioned, one should not become a bookworm. And one should also not try to, as Srivas Pandit Prabhu was pointing
actually,
out.
Actually, he's Pandit Srivas. Mukarvan just
Pandit
told
Srivas.
Me.
That makes it easier for us. So. Thank you for your comments from Cincinnati. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. Really like the point about multitasking, which you mentioned. Mm. So somehow in Kali Yuga, everything works topsy-turvy. Here, multitasking is generally considered I mean, people consider it generally a symbol of efficiency, that I can do many things, and unfortunately, but that creeps in the spiritual life and even in our preaching and relationships. It's like we are doing three things at the same time, talking to a person, thinking about another, and texting to a third. And it was, for me, it was very much, it flashed when I saw that in my students. And then I realized that, hey, I also do the same thing. And somehow trying to fit in many blocks within the same amount of time, but actually you don't go any further mileage with any of the block. So this is very profound you mentioned, and thank you for reminding us that how at one point of time only main thing and that main thing in that particular time.
Yeah, it's anxiety inducing to think about something else while you're doing the present thing. And there's also a principle, we talked about this yesterday at a class at Salesforce, where we have one asset that's distinctly ours, and that is our attention. We have free will, but that free will allows us the ability to place our attention wherever we decide to place it. And this actually becomes the direction that we move in life. The saying, where attention goes, energy flows, is very true, and you'll notice that. And you'll also notice that in relationships, as you are speaking with someone or interacting with someone, if you divert your attention, even for a fraction of a second, people will notice. It's almost like a break in the internet signal, that they notice that you withdrew your attention. What's wrong? You're not interested in talking to me? You don't like me anymore? It's that subtle. And so giving one's full attention to Krishna when one's practicing devotional service and to the task at hand is a very important way of staying on track and not becoming overwhelmed with doing too many things at one time or breaking the relationship. What other points? Yes.
So I like the point that the more we endeavor for happiness, the more suffering that we get, what Prahlad Maharaj was speaking. So we see it everywhere. Like, for example, if somebody wants to get married to a beautiful person, fights the whole world, thinking that he will get some sense gratification immediately after marriage, it's like a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So the song that Prabhupada was saying, that Shukher Lagia Eghar Badhinu Anule Puriya Galop. Just, yeah. So,
means?
You see it, huh?
Means?
Means like the...
Oh, you were saying the Sanskrit verse? You were,
yeah.
Pronounce it.
Yeah. It's like, I have made this home
for happiness.
Oh, that's
the Bengali for that,
yes,
saying.
Okay. Yes, yes. So, the more we endeavor for happiness, the more we endeavor for our sense gratification, the more suffering we get.
So. Yes. Prahlad Maharaj does make that point in his teachings to his classmates, that the moment that one tries for sense gratification, that's the moment you begin to suffer mentally. And when you try for service, then even if you're not able to enact it physically at that point, you start to experience happiness. There's ways in which one may not be in a position to perform the service, but the thought is there that I want to do this, I'm going to do it. Even start doing it mentally, you'll feel satisfied. So these are important principles to note, and if one notes them carefully, one's life can follow that track. There's nothing to lose and everything to gain by taking up Krishna's instructions and giving full attention to him and to his service and to the service to the devotees. Whereas there's everything to lose by taking the risk of going off on one's own with one's own plan and trying to find happiness elsewhere. It ends up as a pile of ashes somewhere. And there's nobody to blame except for those who didn't study the science carefully enough. Yes?
Just before this verse of Sukhi Nara, Lord Krishna, he mentions the definition of this kind of, not definition, the characteristic of such happiness, that it has a beginning and an end.
Mm.
So that's, that. Like I always remember that, if, you know, so material happiness means we can, the boundaries are there, it's not everlasting.
Yeah, it probably gives this example, that verse, Yehi samsparshaja bhoga dukha yonaya evate adyanta vantakonte anate shuramate buna. So interestingly, in this verse, it says the womb of misery is this contact of the material senses and their objects. And it has, a wise person doesn't delight in it because he knows it'll end. So Prabhupada said, someone invites you to their beautiful home. You could make an image in your mind of the most beautiful home you can imagine. Do you have it in your mind? And there they promise you many sensual delights if you just come to the house. Plus, they'll award you what's a significant amount of money right now in cash? 20 million. That's the minimum, right? Okay, so they'll give you all kinds of essential happiness, including ice cream or kulfi, whatever you like. And there's, unlimited, whatever you can think of. And then at the end, they'll also give you $20 million in cash. And then after that's all done, just before you leave, three very big men will come out from the back room with shoes, and they'll beat you. And they'll take away your $20 million. And then they'll kick you out. So then Prabhupada said, would you agree to go? No. And so in a similar way, adyanta vanta konteya, there's a way in which I may get some gain in the material world, but in the end, I'm beaten with shoes by death. It's all taken away from me. And not only that, those three big men will throw you in a car and then drive you down the freeway, open the door, and throw you out. And you'll end up in an unknown place. So in a similar way, we endeavor for many things in this world. We collect them together. We try to enjoy them. And then death comes, beats us with shoes. And what happens? Then we are thrown out of some womb somewhere in an unknown place. And we end up, we're born all bloody from the last life, practically. We come out into the world confused and disoriented, and we have to start over again. Therefore, Kapiladeva goes into great detail about the child within the womb who becomes aware of his existential crisis, and that is that he is caught in this loop where he keeps getting bewildered by the material modes of nature, and he prays to the Lord that please let me stay in the womb, because at least I realize what my position is. As soon as I come out, I'm going to forget. So when one has an opportunity to remember the goal of life, one should take it very seriously. That's an important moment in one's life. When that traction takes place, one thinks, I'm actually going to do this. I'm not going to hear about it and then go back to business as usual, but I'm actually going to take steps to make this happen. There is always the possibility that one could decide to surrender to Krishna wholeheartedly and not hold anything back. That's the prerogative of the soul. Just as much as it's our prerogative to place our attention wherever we wish, we can also wholeheartedly surrender to Krishna at any time that we wish or that we desire. And he will reciprocate. Ye yata mam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham mamavart manavartante manusha partasarvasha. Krishna says, however you surrender to me, I'll reciprocate. I'll reward you accordingly. What other things did you hear? Yes. Vrindasevika.
Hare Krishna. I like these examples with Girardelli and Coca-Cola, and how it's like every day they're bombing from all possible directions these messages with promising happiness. But once you know that it's all, that's just mirage, so it's like a sword, so you can protect yourself just from not taking it too seriously, not taking it, not even considering this, that there is such possibility in material world.
Yeah. I mean, why do you have to believe the status quo? Sometimes people, they fall for this phony argument that There's some animals that are farm animals that are meant to be eaten, and other animals are designated as pets. I heard this when I was a kid, and I asked about that, and they told me that, and I was thinking, that seems really arbitrary and kind of ridiculous. And these kinds of mental constructs go on in the name of maintaining what Devamrita Swami likes to call mass consensual trance. And people voluntarily agree to stay in this trance. But the way to become dispelled of these illusory ideas and these mental constructs, which are disastrous, is to take the very straightforward and commonsensical advice that Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita. It's very plainly laid out. And he merely gives us the clear information by which we can better ourselves by our own impetus and using our own volition, we can better ourselves. And he merely gives us that information and then invites us to take it wholeheartedly. And so one can do that. One could take that up. And that's really the purpose of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, is to propagate very widely the information that Krishna makes available on behalf of Krishna so that people get an opportunity to hear it. It's very commonsensical, and it's something that anyone from any background can take up as long as they're in a human body and make significant advancement, noticeable advancement, and are doing. People are doing all over the world. But it's a cause of great concern and discontent for Vaishnavas to see the mass of people who have either not received the information or haven't been able to take advantage of it in various ways. This is one of the responsibilities that devotees take up, and that is to build systems and ways in which the mass of people can come in contact with the teachings of Bhagavad Gita and then have facility to practice it. As people need good association, they also need clear systems that they can follow from the level that they're starting from in order for them to make advancement in devotional service. And you'll notice that our founder, Acharya Srila Prabhupada, went to great lengths to create such an environment for people all over the world because he knew that both things had to be there. And it's our duty to fine-tune those systems so that the people that we're interacting with can then make step-by-step advancement in the science of the Bhagavad Gita. And that takes a lot of work, doesn't it? I mean, anyway, one more. Yes, from the internet. Extra points for internet comments. Prizes, bonuses.
Much related to what you just mentioned, but this is from Karuna Shakti Mataji.
Karunya Shakti.
Yeah, Karunya Shakti, yes. Hare Krishna, I like the comment about how intoxicants make one bewildered, and hence they cannot inquire about the intrinsic subject matters. It made me think about how many people drink coffee in the morning thinking it makes them sharper.
Yeah. Well, another point about taking intoxication is that it's much more difficult to develop in a spiritual integrity because one is never quite sure if it's the stimulant that is allowing one to exceed one's former abilities. In other words, you seem better than you were, and then you think, oh yeah, I did a good job, and then you think, oh, maybe it was the stimulant, I'm not actually that good. Like athletes sometimes, they cheat and they take performance-enhancing drugs. And then, of course, once it's found out, their reputation is finished because, you didn't actually do it, the drug did it. So there's also a doubt that people have in their minds when they don't simply depend on their God-given abilities and the hormones that are already naturally there when one doesn't overstimulate the body. To perform devotional service, and then when one notices, when one's completely careful in following these principles, that one's excelling, one can be very connected with Krishna, that, oh, he's empowering me to do certain things and speak in certain ways. It wasn't the drug that was speaking. So it's another reason that one should be freed from intoxicants. What else? Okay. Mukarvind.
Maharaj, I think one comment I remember from your Google program when that lady made that, how she's just collecting everything, and when at the end everything is going to lose, so that practical realizations when she told it, it opened, and I like very much that how she can feel that whatever she is gathering now is at death, everything is going to go away.
What did he say?
So what I understood is that in Google program, one lady, she probably confessed. I mean, you must have mentioned about gathering things, they finally go away, and she understood.
You mean collecting material things that you lose later.
You lose, and she understood that, and is that what? She probably understood that she was collecting too many things, and they are all going to go away.
All right, now you say the Bengali about your house burning down.
Shukhera lagia eghar badhinu onole puria galo.
There you have it. I'll get that from you later. I don't know if Prabhupada ever uses the Bengali, but it's a common saying in Bengal, isn't it?
It's not a saying, I think it's a song.
It's a song?
Yeah.
Oh, we should find that song. What a beautiful song. It should be on the radio. But this beautiful house, and it burned down to ashes. Because there's such songs, and people sing the blues and country songs. My lover left me, and my hound dog doesn't like me too. Okay, was there another one? Because I have a few more things. There was something else? Okay. So, if you increase whatever you get, and this atyahara is not advocating, or pratyahara is not advocating that you don't collect anything. Because spiritual intelligence means that one does not reject things that one can use in the service of Krishna. Therefore, it's not a matter of quantity, it's a matter of utility. And when one knows how to utilize everything in the service of Krishna, and to not use those things which are unavailable. Actually, don't do that now because it's distracting everybody's attention. You can get it later. Sorry. I just see where everyone's eyes are going. So Prabhupada describes spiritual intelligence with the following verse. He says, Anasaktasya vishayan yatarham upayunjita nirbanda krishna sambande yuktam vairagyam uchite prapanchakataya buddhya hari sambandhi vasuna vamukshavo gorarupan swarupe. I morphed into another verse. The essence of this verse is that there are unlimited opportunities to serve the Lord throughout the material world. Everything can be used in His service. And one should see the utility of everything and connect it to Krishna. Prabhupada once said that, he was brought a picture of a famous yogi who, when they were offering him money, he's going like this and rejecting it. And Prabhupada says, and you can make a picture of me, they're bringing money and he's taking it all. But he uses it to build temples for Krishna, to print books and distribute them. As Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told him, if you ever get money, print books. So it's not a matter of artificial renunciation. This is called dry renunciation. Phalgu Vairagya, there's a river in India called the Phalgu River where people go when they offer their pinda oblations to their forefathers, and that river appears to be dry. But if you dig down into it, you'll find there's water underneath. And similarly, those who have a desire to enjoy the material world but externally don't touch anything, but harbor desires within, are artificially renouncing. And giving up things that can be used is artificial renunciation. So the principle has to be understood, how to connect everything in Krishna's service. And this is very well orchestrated through the Sankirtan movement, because there are unlimited ways in which we can use energy in order to expand the teachings of Bhagavad Gita and the principle of chanting the Lord's names to people all over the world. And all kinds of technologies and material goods and energies can be used for that purpose. So this pratyahara means to be very measured in one's own life, in the way that one collects things, and seeing how they're beneficial for keeping oneself healthy and steady so that one can inquire about the absolute truth and go on with one's practice. At the same time, one may accept unlimited material things as long as he or she knows how to use them properly and can digest them and use them properly in the service of the Lord. And by digestion, I mean that you don't become overwhelmed by them and then say, oh, yeah, this is yukta vairagya, but at the same time, you've become attached to them personally. So one has to be careful about that. So if you don't apply that principle, then whatever you get will not be enough. There'll be this sense of lacking in whatever material goods that you attain. And the more you get, the more your attachments will increase. And the cycle never ends. Therefore, when people make material advancement at every level of success, they simply stay the same. Because they have an incrementally and equally increasing amount of desire for more. So if I get $1 million, I'll think that's not very much, because there's plenty of other people in my neighborhood who have $10 million. And when you get $10 million, you'll think that's not enough either, because there's lots of people that have $100 million. And once you get $100 million, you'll think that's not enough, because there's lots of people that have $1 billion. And billionaires, you'll notice, they go on working very hard there's not, to maintain it. And as Prabhupada mentioned in that purport, material happiness is very hard to attain. And of course, we're making the case that you never quite attain it. And even if you were to get some material situation that appears to be materially beneficial, it's hard to develop, and it's also hard to maintain. Again, it doesn't mean that you don't do your due diligence to integrate with the world in such a way that you can live a healthy, responsible, and even materially developed way, as long as it is specifically so that you can stay healthy and balanced for advancing in spiritual life. In other words, for instance, say that you're making money. It doesn't mean that you throw it all away, but it means that you're a good steward of the money that you get, so that as a grihasthas, you can contribute in big ways to help spread Krishna consciousness around the world. When Vasudeva Dutta was engaged in his services, he was so much absorbed and was giving away all his money, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent Shivananda Sen, who was extremely aware of all kinds of circumstances in the world and how to balance them. He was the head of the yatras. He would help to get everyone houses along the way and so forth. He knew how to pay boatmen and things like that. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent Shivananda Sen to Vasudeva Dutta, telling Shivananda, please go help Vasudeva Dutta to organize his finances. He's giving everything away, and he needs to maintain his family and so forth in a proper way. So this is a matter of understanding how to balance one's life properly. So this principle of happiness can be summarized in a word of santosh. And santosh means? Yes. So we did this exercise in Govardhan. It was a class given by His Holiness Dhanadhar Maharaj. And he asked us to pick a word, a correlating word, that would describe satisfaction. a very practical application of satisfaction. What word would you use? Okay, peace. What else? What? Happy? Contentment? Contentment? Huh? Complacent? Devotional service? Well, the word he used was very useful, I thought, so I'm representing it here. The word is enough. When you see your circumstances and you say enough, this is Santosh, as he presented. And there's a way in which you can notice this in yourself. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, yadrichya labha santushto. He says, when you learn, or he said you should learn, to be satisfied with gain that comes of its own accord. And after all, Narada Muni presented in his teachings to Srila Vyasadeva that just as bad luck comes of its own accord, similarly good luck comes too, of its own accord. You can do so many things to invite good luck, but does it mean you're going to get more good luck?
No.
Okay. I mean, you don't have to agree. You can say whatever you want. And you can also do many things to ward off bad luck. Like what? Huh? Gemstone. Yeah, sure, you can wear gemstones. Vastu, you can do Vastu. Pray to Krishna. Does it mean that bad luck won't visit your house?
No.
Only one person. Nobody even wants to comment on that one. It's like, if I say no, what's going to happen next? I mean, it's such a tenuous situation in the material world. It's like, I'll just stay out of that one. But there's a way in which these things come to us unsought. Narada Muni says, look at the balance sheet. Your happiness and your distress come to you unsought. So Krishna advises in the Bhagavad Gita, yadrichya labha santushto. Yadrichya means things come naturally to you. So be satisfied with how they come. And those who are satisfied with gain, which comes of its own accord, then there's another level. Those who are satisfied even when bad luck comes, they take it as Krishna's arrangement. That's tate anukampam susamikshamanu bunchane vatmakritam vipakam. One accepts responsibility that these events are occurring because of my past activities. It is good for me. I'm burning out my material life. It's going away now by Krishna's mercy, and he's only giving me a token of what I actually deserve, just so that I can keep my head in the game. Because if I don't have those things, then I'll forget him completely. So this principle of santosh is very important. That whatever I have, first of all, it requires some sense of gratitude. Because there's a way in which when one gets more and more material facility and forgets where it's coming from and that it's being provided by the Supreme, one may take it for granted. One may even develop a sense of entitlement that I deserve a certain level of enjoyment in this material world. This is very dangerous because this will become the root cause of dissatisfaction, because no one can maintain that. Everyone at some time or another will be asked to divest themselves of all the things that they've collected in this world. They'll either sift away slowly or they'll be abruptly taken away. Therefore, this miscalculation that I can keep everything and I'm entitled to so many things is a cause of suffering. But santosh, which means enough, I have enough of everything. Whatever it is, I'm satisfied with it. In fact, one should learn to be satisfied with a little service, or a lot, a little prasadam. Let me put it like this: service, a little prasadam, and a place to lie down, and a full set of Prabhupada's books. Just the basic necessities for one's spiritual life: a bead bag, and a little chunk of tea lock, and a Bhagavatam or a Bhagavad Gita and a little prasadam. If you find yourself santosh, you feel this is enough for me, then you become the wealthiest person in the world. Whereas you may be born into great wealth, but if you think I'm entitled to this and much more, and when you get a modicum less, you may then think, oh, I'm suffering so much because this isn't up to my standard of happiness. So santosh is real wealth. This complete understanding that I'm being maintained by Krishna at every second, in whatever situation of life I'm in, it's enough.
Thank you.
I'll just take a few more reflections before I move on to the last stage. About santosh, yes.
Yeah, I was just thinking about santosh and this very potent remark of enough. And I was just thinking that even today, even materialistic people, they are commenting on this concept of the power of less, being minimalistic. Minimalistic, which is required, but not collecting a lot of baggage, because given the tenuous situation of the world, people move, situations change, and especially when that happens, the baggage really hits, because where did all these things come? So I was just pondering the power of less, and actually the less then is more, because it will just spiritually make you lighter, and you can elevate faster. Otherwise, it will take you down.
Yes, and Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that you shouldn't take more than you need and you shouldn't take less than you need. Prabhupada makes this point in the Bhagavatam also. This enough is, it's not a stereotype quantity, but it is adjustable to each individual person according to what you need to maintain yourself. You take that and don't take more. Don't take less either, he says. It's to maintain a balance. But be aware that it's coming from Krishna, and you're using it, you're connecting it to him. And if you work in that way, even great kings that are mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam had unlimited wealth, but because they engaged it all in Krishna's service, they were fully Krishna conscious. It's not about renunciation, it's about dedication. Yes, who's ever on the phone, go right ahead.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.
And I wanted to ask that on the verses that Krishna comes out in Gita, why does he use the phrase, that's my opinion, in the end?
Why does he say, this is my opinion?
Yes.
Like, ye me matam idam nityam. Well, because he's a person, and he has his own opinion. And
okay.
And just like he has everything else, he has a family and he has pets, and surabir apipalayantam. Krishna has pets. Like, why does he have? Why does he keep cows for pets? He's a person. He likes them. He has his own. He has his own particular likes in life. And so when he talks about his opinion, yeah, he has his own opinion. This is an individual. However, his opinion and my opinion are quite different. His opinion is absolute. It's charming in a way, because you say, Krishna says, and he defers in the Bhagavad Gita even to the Upanishads. He'll refer. It's said by great sages. It's said by Vedanta Sutra. He'll refer to the Shastra and so forth. And meanwhile, he's the source of the Shastra. Knowing the Shastra means knowing him. So it's a very charming aspect of his personal but absolute nature. Thank you very much for your question. Yes.
I have a question. Like, you just told that we should not have stuffs more than we need and less than we need, but it's very difficult to know, like, what is
what is my capacity or actually how much should I have? Because in this material world, it seems like there is no end to having. But how do we know where is my balance?
It's what you need for your service. So you should have a clear idea of what your service is, and then see what you need to enact your service. And if you stay within that parameter, then you'll be very clear about what to use and what not to use. Or at least you'll be clearer, or ish. And if you need guidance, you can talk to people who know, sadhus who know. Like one sannyasi was just talking about how, he went to a sadhu and he was saying, telling time's important, but a sannyasi, I'm a renunciate, wearing an expensive watch, this could be troublesome. Someone might think this or that. And then the sadhu said, yes, you must tell time, have a watch, 100 rupees. 100-rupee watch, that is. Not a $10,000 watch or something like that. Be aware of, in your station of life, what you need. There may be others who are acting in a larger capacity. Of course, one has to be careful about these things that may need to display more opulence in order to execute their service. Ambarish, I'm talking Ambarish Prabhu, or God, my God brother, and the descendant of Henry Ford. When he goes around and meets big people of the world and stuff like that, he doesn't go in flip flops. He'll wear a pair of shoes. And someone said, "What do you need those shoes for? Why don't you just go in bare feet?" And he's saying, "I'm going to meet the president of India or something like that." It's like it's appropriate for your service and your time. So you have to triangulate and find out. If you don't know for sure, you can take help from mentors and say, how much is too much? How much is too little? And Gaudiya Vaishnavism is a culture of guidance. We take guidance carefully from all points so that we stay on track. And when you become detached from guidance and you think, I know better, or I can do it on my own, then your path becomes a little bit dangerous and unclear. Yes.
Hare Krishna. All right. So first thing, when you were talking about the santosh, in my mind I thought it's an antithesis to the real world, because you can't really have the motivation if you're santosh, if you're satisfied. And I think in corporate world and also the social status, everybody's striving to actually do one better for themselves. So what's your thought of, how do we attain santosh but also be part of the social?
Well, first of all, just because somebody's materially ambitious doesn't mean they're going to get ahead. Someone may have a strong desire to advance materially and they may be a flop. So that doesn't mean just because you're more aggressive that you do better. And it also doesn't mean because you're spiritually satisfied that you also can't perform well in the material world. In fact, Arjuna is given as an example frequently. Although he had, after speaking to Krishna, after hearing from Krishna, no more material motivation, he wasn't thinking about his own comfort or situation after the war, which he was in the beginning. He's thinking, why is this good for me? I'm going to kill everybody, and even if I get the kingdom, then who's going to appreciate that I have the kingdom? All the people that I want to admire me are going to be dead, so why should I even fight? But when he understood this, the principle of Bhagavad Gita, which was that you're doing it out of dedication, you're not doing it for enjoyment, and you're not to renounce it either. You're meant to do your activities as a dedication to the Supreme, even if you're a warrior. And Arjuna became even more adroit in his service of fighting when he was doing it for Krishna. The impetus was coming from a deeper level. And he wasn't subject to discouragement also in the fight, which is a symptom of those who work on a higher level. Even in the mode of goodness, determination is based on duty. And duty is stronger motivation than prospect of what I'm going to get in return. And an even higher level of motivation is love. Bhaktivinoda Thakur lists these various motivations. In the beginning, one may do it out of prospect. Above prospect, one may do it out of duty. Above duty is a love, that you actually want to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we could argue that the devotees are even more productive. You see some acharyas. I mean, who's more productive, even from a material standard, than Prabhupada? He was listed amongst an elite group of people who started at 7 years old and then became, multi-billionaire in every currency of the world and started centers everywhere. And what was his motivation? He didn't keep anything. He didn't need it. So that kind of working for advancement in the material, or we call ambition, that can be generated from a much deeper level, from a spiritual level. Does that help? Okay. Thank you very much. Yes?
When we talk about material progress and, working in with the motive of serving Krishna, whenever you're in the office. But what about the industry you're working in? It's like, let's say someone is working in a gaming industry, which is like a spiritual blocker to anyone. People are wasting hours and hours. And when you look at these things, you're contributing to that. When you work for that, you're contributing to that kind of activity. How do you get motivation when it goes completely against,
Well, someone? Krishna says in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that every endeavor is covered with some sort of fault, just like fire has smoke. Fire is very useful. In fact, we use it for Vedic sacrifice, but then someone might say, hey, look at all the smoke. So similarly, there are brahmanas. Brahmanas are known in the times of yore to have performed sacrifice where animals were killed. Then you have kshatriyas. Kshatriyas have to go out and kill people. They're doing it for service, but it's not ideal. And then Vaishyas, they have to lie all the time. They say, I make for you, I make no profit. That's not true. And Shudras have to do their duty for other people. Even if they have a bad master, they still have to do it. So the material world's not an ideal situation. And as far as livelihood goes, one should invent some livelihood so that one can maintain one's body and mind and soul in this material world and go on doing one's service. If you find yourself in an extremely adverse situation, it's not so difficult to change to another situation where you don't feel that you're having nightmares every night because of the association you have. That's something that can be worked out. And usually devotees who find themselves in extremely adverse work situations where they're doing something that's antithetical to the principles of devotional service find out a different way to make a livelihood. But if not, then one's advised, stane stita shruti gatam tanuvan manobir. If you can't make a sudden move, then administer the medicine as you're taking it and Krishna will help you make an arrangement. Does that help? Okay. Yes, we have from the internet for extra bonus points.
This is from Facebook. Ron Robinson, I'm not sure what his name is. If wealth comes to one of its own accord, is one to be considered negligent if one does not try to increase the value of that wealth even if he has no business acumen?
We shouldn't be haphazard in the way that we deal with the assets that Krishna gives us. But fortunately, there's lots of people that you can consult and lots of information where you can make a balanced decision about what to do with your assets in order to protect them properly and also utilize them to the best end so that you can get the most out of them. And there's a lot of decisions to make in life. It's not such an easy thing, is it? So do the best you can. Get the best information you can from experts, and then make decisions based on what's best for your service in the end. And if you make a few mistakes along the way, Krishna will make up for it. At least you tried. Nobody gets through this life without making a bunch of mistakes. But if your intention is to help expand the Krishna consciousness movement, to increase your own practice of Krishna consciousness, then those mistakes will be rectified by Krishna in due course of time. Yes.
I just wanted to add my point that it's a simple rule that you said utility is the main thing and not the quantity.
Yes.
That helps to make the decisions.
It does.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes? More online.
So it's NAT.
We're racking up the Dilachian bonus points for the online.
NAT Dilachian.
I'm sorry?
Name is NAT Dilachian. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, I have been experiencing santosh in my life in every level. Whenever I feel something is not to my so-called quote and unquote standard, I started to feel anxious and down. But as soon as I make my mind go back to the state of Krishna consciousness, then all the anxiety and discomfort disappear in no time.
There it is, proof positive.
And
we didn't pay him to write that.
Krishna Namadas Prabhu is asking, if my mind is disturbed about lack of proper material situation and facilities, does this mean that I am out of balance in accepting what is necessary for me, my quota, and I should focus more on improving it?
Well, the two things aren't mutually exclusive. You can work on improving it to some degree and at the same time feel satisfaction at where you are now. If one accepts whatever has come to one as one's lot in life, it doesn't also mean that you can't do your level best to improve. Prahlad Maharaj mentions that a boat can't save a drowning man, parents can't save the children, and medicine can't save a sick person. Balasyaneha sharanam pitarao nashingha. So what Prabhupada says in the Prabhupada, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't do your due diligence to try to save your children or to do the best work that you can to save somebody on the ocean. But you should understand this principle that whatever you're able to do comes from Krishna. In Ayurvedic medicine, when you take the medicine, there's a mantra you have to say that unless Narayan blesses this with his potency, it's not going to work anyway. And that's a similar application to all the circumstances in our life. You take it, but you consider it's up to Krishna. And in that way, you'll feel satisfaction. So it's one should find, if you're in a situation where you have so little material facility that you're not able to do your service, then you may have to make some adjustment. For instance, if you don't have transportation to get to where you're going, you may have to work a little bit to make it happen. Kadambakananda Swami tells about how he was a married person and he and his wife made a mutual decision that he would take sannyas. And then he said he had to work really hard for a couple of years in order to make that happen. He had to work harder, he said, for those 2 years to take sannyas to make facility for his wife so that she wouldn't be left bereft of everything, to buy her house and all kinds of things so that he could renounce. So there are various situations for various people, and again, you have to find out what you need, and then if you need more, then although you shouldn't feel at any time completely bereft because of your material situation, you can feel that you need to increase it for your service. What happened to Avantika? She disappeared.
One more question.
Okay, yes.
One more question is from Siddhant. I think you referred in the class Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Sudra. So his question is how we define in Krishna word, means Krishna consciousness, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Sudra. Apparently, he's asked this question by many people who think Hinduism as a religion.
What's a Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra?
In Krishna's word, means in Krishna consciousness, how it means, and it does it from bodily consciousness or...
It has to do with one's quality. As Krishna, quality and one's work. So Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that these various divisions of life are natural. They're created by Krishna, so they're not going to go away. There are various political parties who have tried to do away with the four divisions of life, but they're unsuccessful. As Prabhupada used to point out, the idea of communism was that there would just be, everyone would be a Shudra. There are no leaders, everyone's Shudra. But then you've got the people who are administering this advice and the ones who are acting as Shudras. The divisions come up because they're eternal. They're created by Krishna. So everyone works according to their qualities, and they work in a certain way. So these divisions can be seen naturally in society. And it's a bigger topic to discuss how that gets organized within the context of modern society, one that's going on quite extensively in the devotional community, because Prabhupada did mention that it's important to try to organize societies in such a way that people feel that they're working according to their natural propensities. This is something that oftentimes, for instance, in America, we don't get so much of, because the idea is everyone should be educated on an equal level. Of course, it's not working. Obviously, you can see from the results of various elections, people just elect whoever gets advertised the most. That's why whoever has the most money wins, because they say, this guy's good, that guy's really bad, and they go, okay. But no one really is educated enough to know what to do. That's the idea behind democracy, make everybody equally intellectual. But it doesn't quite work, does it? So there's a way in which vocational training is very much advocated for a society to work well, and people have different propensities. Let them, from an early time, be educated according to their propensities so that they can excel in those different areas, because we need the various aspects of work that people can display according to their abilities and their propensities. That's a very general answer, but I hope it helps. Hare Krishna.
Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman. Hey, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.